Yeah, I think that is fair. When you've got regulations coming through where unless a building meets a certain specification and sustainability criteria that you are unable then to lease it to tenants, in that inevitably speeds up or creates the potential issues of obsolescence and the absolute need for, you know, investors and owners of real estate to respond to that.
You're listening to Conversations by Cushman and Wakefield. In this four-part series, we're rethinking the office and how this asset class can be optimized for a new era. I'm Amy Kelly. Thanks for joining. In Europe, sustainability legislation has led to estimates that around three quarters of its office stock could become obsolete by 2030. To learn more about how sustainability is impacting real estate in Asia Pacific, I'm joined today by Gordon Marsden, who heads up our capital markets team, and Micah Kania, who sits on our sustainability and ESG team. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. Glad to be here.
I'd like to start, as we have the previous few episodes, by asking about the biggest pain point you guys are hearing about from clients right now. Gordon, I might start with you. What's the number one topic of conversation at the moment?
So sat on the investor side, capital markets side of our business, it is about the costs of implementation. And secondly, around the fact that across Asia Pacific, we're talking about very different geographies, which are at very different stages in the evolution of their sustainability journeys.
And Micah, the conversation that you find yourself having the most with clients?
Yeah, I'll start just by echoing the point that Gordon made from the investor perspective, really navigating the regulatory landscape in all of the locations where they have assets, understanding the implications for them both now and the future, as well as the challenge of no or few global frameworks for different aspects of sustainability, from building certifications to climate pledges. They're really coming to us for help translating what this all means and how best to keep on top of that. And I will give a view also from the occupier side, which I think is they're having similar challenges, but also that demand is outstripping supply for green buildings in this region. Many have included locating in a certified green building in their lease requirements, but they're really having challenges in many markets to find accredited space.
Wow, there's a lot of topics there to unpack. But I think we might start with just the fact that you both mentioned that APAC is quite a diverse region. Obviously, many different markets all at different stages in their development. What does sustainability look like for real estate across the region? Maybe, Micah, that's one for you.
One of the big drivers worth elaborating on that's really impacting regulations as well as incentive programs is countries setting decarbonization targets. And the impact on the real estate industry is great. I think a number that we've all heard, and it can even be higher than 40% of greenhouse gas emissions are attributed to the built environment. So any country with a decarbonization target will need to address their buildings.
Sure. And I suppose, Gordon, that has natural flow on ramifications for investors then across the region.
Absolutely. We obviously are across investors pursuing a wide variety of initiatives, some of those geographically concentrated, and therefore they are only looking at the issues and regulations specific to their home market, with something of an eye on what might be coming down the track in the fullness of time. But sat as I do in Singapore, at the sort of the confluence, I guess, of capital deployment around Asia Pacific, we have a significant number of investors undertaking, you know, cross-border initiatives and that getting that understanding across all those different considerations in each of the different markets.
You've both mentioned sustainability legislation in other parts of the world. I know that legislation introduced in Europe in particular has led to estimates that around 75% of office buildings there could become obsolete by the end of the decade. Is it fair to say that sustainability is causing obsolescence of office stock?
Yeah, I think that is fair. When you've got regulations coming through where unless a building meets a certain specification and sustainability criteria, that you are unable then to lease it to tenants. In that inevitably speeds up or creates the potential issues of obsolescence and the absolute need for, you know, investors and owners of real estate to respond to that.
If I could elaborate maybe a bit on the point that you mentioned, Gordon, for, you know, regulations panning out in this region, what that's looking at compared to other regions, some might say we're a bit behind, but those regulations are coming. To give some examples of how this is panning out in a few locations within our region, Singapore, I think, is a really good example. They have one of the more robust plans in APAC for how they plan on achieving their decarbonization targets by addressing the building stock. With their Green Building Master Plan, they're really raising mandatory sustainability standards for energy efficiency for both new and existing buildings. And this is having a huge impact on the market. South Korea has another good example, specifically in Seoul. The government has implemented regulations that address both existing and new public and private buildings with their zero energy building program. And Australia is worth mentioning too, because they have mandates focused on disclosure. So for example, sellers and leasers of office space must have an up-to-date building energy efficiency certificate or NABERS rating. And governments at various levels also have specific requirements of levels of ratings that they require for any space that they occupy. So all of these regulations are having an impact not only on their market, but other countries looking at regulations that are appearing in other countries to take some cues for what's working and what might help drive their decarbonization goals.
Let's pivot now and talk a little bit about how building owners can make sustainability pay. Gordon, do you want to start us off perhaps by sharing a little bit of what you hear from investors when it comes to the sustainability conversation?
Perhaps I could start this by how I categorize investors and owners today. The first category is where you've got groups that are already holding office real estate in a closed-ended or, you know, product of finite duration, and therefore there is going to be an exit at some point in time. The reality of how that universe is set up in Asia Pacific is that the business plans are defined at the point of entry, the point of initial sort of acquisition, and will have incorporated, you know, anticipated a budget for a number of these initiatives. But we have seen considerable levels of market dislocation and disruption over the course of the last few years, and therefore perhaps over the hold period or the typical hold period of that sort of real estate. There might well be instances where investors are being asked to tip in additional equity at all costs into a project. And that may be because they're having to hold the real estate longer than anticipated. There might well be a refinancing event, meaning that you're looking at lower loan to values, LTVs, possibly on lower valuations as well. There's also been that disruption in the occupational markets as well, where I guess the reaction may well be in the form of more incentives and indeed more marketing to attract tenants in the first place. So investors are faced with all of those possibilities in terms of having to tip more equity or cost. And that's in some respects before you kind of get to something that may well be ESG related or getting the asset ready for the next buyer in. And so amongst those investors, it very much comes down to a question of what's it going to cost me and am I really going to see the return in this?
There are a number of sustainability measures that do make great business cases. I think the best one would be energy efficiency, as it saves money and reduces carbon for investors who own real estate in a closed-ended format. High-impact saving measures where the payback is short or the building has a greater need. So some examples, as I mentioned, energy efficiency being a good one with short payback periods could include lighting upgrades, HVAC controls, retro commissioning, and insulating plant rooms. Focusing on the S in ESG, so implementing social initiatives, can also enhance assets and engage tenants in the broader community. And a number of these strategies can be implemented at lower no cost. So for this category, some examples that might be helpful for this type of investor that we've helped clients with include providing indoor and outdoor space at no cost or low cost for local community groups, student clubs, and NGOs to hold meetings and events. Other things such as hosting farmers markets on site, providing shared space for fitness classes for tenants, as well as implementing broader tenant engagement programs. But I do think it's worth noting that even assets where maybe there's limited funding for improvements in the near future, having a longer term roadmap is really important.
So this is sort of category two in my mind is around long-term holders of office real estate. And they may well actually fall into two different categories. There are those kind of family-controlled developers and listed companies, you know, of which Asia has an awful lot that control a significant proportion of the real estate around Asia Pacific. And then there's a second group, which is those holding REITs or quasi-REITs, you know, business trusts or wholesale, you know, platforms, or indeed something that is open-ended or sort of evergreen in nature, where there is more visibility, potentially because they are in the public markets, or alternatively just because of the nature of the capital sat behind those initiatives. And there is greater scrutiny over those as a consequence at the forefront of this sort of participation into sustainability initiatives. When we did the rethinking report for Asia Pacific, we obviously identified that there is a lot of office real estate stock that does not even have a sustainability rating. It may well be that the building would achieve a good, possibly even very good sustainability rating, but because it's been kind of held through a developer or listed company where a lot of the financing of happens at the corporate level as opposed to at the underlying real estate asset level, then they have perhaps been able to proceed to date without those sustainability ratings in place. But I think as you see this evolution in the demands of tenants, that will absolutely need to change over time.
Micah, any thoughts on that second group of investors that Gordon's talking about?
I was just going to add a few points on the developer side. I think really key is that they're taking into consideration their potential buyers. If the buyers have their own sustainability goals, what those are, as well as how they might be impacted by regulations versus public companies will be more susceptible to regulations around climate disclosure and disclosure even for industry-recognized programs that are, at the time, voluntary, like GRESB. But that's something that they'll need to consider as well. And maybe if I can pass the question back to Gordon, I'd be curious to hear from your viewpoint speaking with investors, whether they have an interest in sustainability or not, what their views are on GRESB, if how they perceive it is important to them. Are they tracking results? Is it on their radar? Do they have a good understanding of the program? Because at least to date, that's the most globally used and applied one, although it is voluntary.
Yeah, I think what we are seeing is that a number of the industry associations in Asia Pacific are increasingly putting out indices or trackers associated with the real estate universe. And part and parcel of that is ensuring that you're also tracking appropriately on the ESG and the sustainability side of things. I think there is this increased adoption of sustainability and ESG codes, obviously different for different markets around Asia Pacific. Everybody seems to have their favored, but it's not just isolated to the energy and therefore your GRESB or your neighbors, but also now increasingly into other areas such as around the digital infrastructure of a building. or indeed around the wellness of a building. And so we're also sort of seeing the evolution and the uptake amongst owners and as people, you know, raise capital for new initiatives of kind of hitting certain levels of standardization across a number of different parts of the ESG conundrum.
I was at an event recently and there was some discussion around just how much of a priority ESG actually is to investors. And I guess coming at this topic from slightly different perspectives, I'd be interested in hearing both your thoughts. Micah, initial thoughts?
I would say it's definitely in the top five, but not number one. Would you agree with that, Gordon?
From the investor standpoint, I would say that it is still its returns that are prioritized. And as you move through from the core return arena in Asia Pacific, where ESG is more in focus, into the value add and indeed into the opportunistic end of the spectrum, then I would say even more so that return prevails.
But, you know, acknowledging all the points that Gordon made, sustainability can drive financial returns. I think this is a harder argument depending on the type of investment that you have, but it can also be used to attract tenants. I think that we're seeing that increasingly, perhaps not 10 years ago, but it's definitely much so more now on the radar as a lot of companies are making their own net zero carbon targets or just having more broadly publicly stated sustainability goals and needing to address their building stock.
And then perhaps we should get into the third group of investors and their thoughts on sustainability and how they approach it.
So yeah, this is more to do with what comes next. So it's around looking ahead to the establishment and inclusion of office real estate into a future fund, into a future product. So it's a bit more nuanced as to how office strategies kind of weave into the requirements of today. So is it more around that brown to green initiative and that's how you package up your proposition? Is it about repriced real estate and being considered for a value add fund initiative? Or indeed, is it a strategy today about where you're filling the funding gap with credit and debt? And so groups are thinking about these strategies. They're trying to raise capital and they really need to get out in front of some of the ESG and sustainability considerations, because you're talking about potentially a couple of years of capital raising. You're talking about a 3-4 year investment period. You're talking therefore about an 8 to 10 year time horizon from where we are at today. And that's even before giving consideration to what are you selling to the next investor. You know, you've got to be able to, I guess, establish that roadmap and give good reason for the next buyer to come in. So we're beginning to kind of look at these things over something like a 10, 15 year time horizon for those that are looking at today, how they raise capital and how they deploy that in an Asia Pacific context.
I will just add to that too. I think really critical during due diligence is that it's important that a building's sustainability status should be evaluated, and that make the difference of acquisition or not, depending on which investor you're talking to. But asking questions like, what are the risks or advantages does the asset have? Is there a sustainability roadmap already in place? Are there realistic timeframes for upgrades? What makes the asset attractive to tenants? And then considering if you should be applying a premium or a discount based on their sustainability assessment as well.
Micah, you mentioned a sustainability roadmap in there. Do you just want to talk us through that concept for people who may not be across it?
Sure. So first, having a look at your portfolio and a targeted approach, looking at your portfolio to identify which buildings to address is important. From some forward-thinking investors that we're talking to, they're integrating carbon value into their financial modeling by applying what they're calling a green IRR to prioritize which assets to address that might be at risk. And then after identifying the assets, which are most at risk, developing that roadmap that we've mentioned for improvements, and then staging the investments. Really important to consider strategies that are not only improving building performance, but are also helping with tenant retention and attraction, initiatives that will be valued by future buyers, climate mitigation measures, and current and pending regulations.
I guess before we get into the last question, I want to ask you both if there's anything we haven't touched on that you feel is super pertinent to people who are interested in this topic. So investment, sustainability, real estate, and what it means for the office and keeping it relevant as we move forward.
I just will add a point to the roadmap comments that I had made. And it might seem obvious, but perhaps not obvious to everyone, that really critical when coming up with a sustainability roadmap is first considering the investment strategy. And if there are not funds to do improvements in the near term, considering that, still developing a long-term roadmap, but being realistic about what is achievable in the short term. And even if you are not making those improvements while you're holding the asset, having that information for the next owner is valuable. And that's what I've seen when talking to clients.
If I can address that from something that's happening internally here within our organization, because a question I get pretty consistently is, does it pay? And show me that it pays.
I am heartened, I would say, in the last even 5 years to see that a lot of conversations have moved beyond cost, though, Gordon. I think investors and occupiers have a more broadened view into what other considerations they should be looking at. But maybe in the short term, right now, today, they're weighing those quite differently.
I think that's absolutely true. And there's obviously increased conversations around the S of ESG, as was touched on sort of earlier on. So yeah, I think that groups are increasingly looking beyond just the cost component, but it's a frequent starting point for the conversation.
To finish up, as we approach 2030, which is a big year for net zero goals, what do you both anticipate will either change or stay the same as we move along this road towards greening office buildings?
I think there certainly will be more regulations implemented, starting first with reporting and disclosure of operations similar to what we're seeing in Australia, but at scale. Or restrictions on permitting for new construction, as well as incentives for retrofitting existing buildings. I anticipate a massive focus on climate risk mitigation. We're already seeing this, but I expect disclosure to be mandated in all markets by 2030. I'll just put it out there and say it, as well as really changing buyer requirements that are impacted by all of the drivers that Gordon and I have mentioned as well.
Gordon, final thoughts?
So I think that ultimately from the investor perspective, returns will still prevail. So 6-7 years from now, 2030, that will still be forefront and of, you know, investors and owners' minds. Still very optimistic as we kind of look ahead that solutions will be found. But if I can close with, I think there is inevitably going to be that divergence that we will see both geographically and also amongst groups themselves as to how proactive they are as they continue this sustainability and ESG sort of roadmap for the future. So some winners and losers out there inevitably.
Gordon, Micah, thanks for your time. You've been listening to Conversations by Cushman and Wakefield. You can find links to other episodes and to the Rethinking the Office report in the show notes. Gordon Marsden is our Head of Capital Markets for Asia Pacific, and Micah Kania is Senior Director, Sustainability and ESG, also for Asia Pacific. Thanks to Maxwell Love and Brad Bourne for their help producing this episode. I'm Amy Kelly. See you next time.